periodically the machine has got some downtime in order for you to get rid of the carbon. Does that sound reasonable? Over you, Paul, K2RAW.
Now, if I was designing that, I would put a bypass in there. I'd bypass it into another strainer, remove the old one, and, you know, you'd be able to do everything on the run. I'd never shut that thing down. Back to you, Dick.
My microphone unplugged from my rig. Foolishly, I didn't have the outer thing tightened down. The is essentially all fluids that come out of human beings. Are all those fluids recycled, to your knowledge, Paul? In other words, not a great deal of water need be supplied in these cargo ships, because almost all water is recycled. Is that approximately true? And the extra water brought up is only to run the hydrolysis machine when the CO2 converter is on its downtime. Over you, Paul.
Yeah, but when the water gets bad enough, they probably either dump it or whatever. I know they have different tanks. It's like an RV. You know, there's gray and different color tanks for, I guess, the cleanliness of the water, and who knows. But yeah, everything. I mean, even, you know, you see them all exercising up there. You know, they're all sweating. It all gets caught up into these filters, and everything gets recycled. And they're doing pretty good at it. You know, the temperature is always the same. They say the fan noise is a little annoying. You know, everywhere you go, you hear the fan motors. Except for in the beam. If you go into the beam, they say it's pretty quiet. The beam is the Bigelow expandable activity module. Remember Kate Rubin going in there, she said it was pretty quiet. Same with Jeff Williams when he went in there, he gave the same report. But, everything's pretty much recyclable. But whatever it's not, winds up on those cargo ships. Now, they bring plenty of water up. You know, you see, if you've ever gone for those tours, you look at the tours of the space station, the astronaut will take you through. There's always one part they get to, and it's white bag after bag. I mean, it looks like hundreds of bags. They say, this is the water. So I guess they need it as time goes on. As, you know, these are all replacement bags. Back to you, Dick.
That would suggest that only a certain percentage of the water coming out of the fluids coming out of human beings are recycled, whether it be from their exercising, vapor, or other liquid that comes out of a human. And you've got gray tanks and clean tanks, so to speak. And the gray tanks, you'd like to think that, well, we just use those, the not-so-clean water, we'd use that in the electrolysis machine. And that's not a good idea, because all the extra particles that are in that water that makes it gray are going to pile up on the electrodes of the electrolysis machine and stop it from working. So the electrolysis machine really should have pure water, and therefore, I don't see how they can use, if they declare some of the water is gray water, does that mean they're ultimately going to dispose it? I don't think you don't want to use it for cleaning things. You don't want to use it in the electrolysis machine. So what do you do with the so-called gray water, Paul? Over to you, K2RAW.
I know in the old days, they thought nothing of dumping it. I don't know if they continue to do that anymore. My guess, they probably, if they don't use it, they put it onto the cargo vehicles. You know, when those things burn up, if you read the information about what comes back, what gets burnt up, sometimes they're sending up, 5,000-6,000 pounds of stuff, and they're sending back 3,000 pounds of stuff, it's not getting here, they're burning it up in the atmosphere. The only real vehicle that brings anything back is the Dragon. They'll bring back scientific supplies, experiments that need to come back. They bought space suit back one time. They were having problems with the space suit leaking and almost drowning people. And they put that in the Dragon to bring it back so they can examine it when they get back to the lab. But most of the stuff is put into these cargo ships and 2,000, 3,000 pounds of junk, waste, old clothes. And I'm sure it's probably a bunch of water, too, that they don't need. That's my guess. Back to you, Dick.
Of the four cargo ships that go up to the International Space Station with cargo, is Dragon the only one that comes back without burning up, Paul? That's the one where you can bring hardware back that you want to reanalyze? Back to you, Paul.
I'm looking for a courtesy tone. Doesn't sound the same. Okay, yeah, that's, right now, that's the only one that comes back with anything. You know, they might bring a little something back with the Soyuz spacecraft when the crew comes back. I think the most they could bring that back is usually around 100 pounds of stuff. Now with the, two people going up in the spring of 2017, you know, you can eliminate, let's say, you know, another couple hundred pounds. So you'll probably be able to bring back 200 or 300 extra pounds that you probably couldn't have in the past on a progress ship. But right now, yeah, it's the Dragon. And until 2019, when the Dreamcaster starts flying, that'll be a cargo vehicle. Looks like a little shuttle. It's going to be launched on top of the Atlas, Atlas V. And these are all signed contracts with NASA, by the way. They're not going to cancel these. Sierra Nevada is building the Dream Chaser. And that's going to bring up a lot more. That'll bring up probably around 11,000 pounds of stuff. Let me drop it. Or maybe even 12,000 pounds. See, they don't have the problem of this big heavy heat shield that the Dragon has. So they can bring up a lot more stuff to the space station, and they'll be able to bring a lot more stuff back down, because I think it's going to fly like an airplane and will land on a runway. Even Dragon right now has future plans of landing on land with their Dragons. They have a future cargo Dragon that they're building now that will come through the atmosphere and use propulsive landing. No parachute, no nothing. Just come right down on rockets and land on the ground. That's their next version of their cargo spaceship. But until that's built, if they land in the water with parachutes. But Dream Chaser, right from the beginning, will go up on an Atlas V, encapsulated in a fairing, and it will land on a runway. No parachutes. Back to you, Dick. WS2N.
That sounds like a beautiful vehicle. I think you said it can take four astronauts. A real biggie. In the very beginning, when the International Space Station was first established, you didn't have anywhere near as many solar panels as you do now. Therefore, your total kilowatts of solar power was a hell of a lot less. Therefore, you didn't have the power to easily run the electrolysis machine, the carbon dioxide converting machine, and so on. My guess is, in the beginning, the majority of the oxygen they were breathing came out of tanks they brought up there. As such, I'm starting to see some of the reasons why, in the beginning, the total number of astronauts on board was a much smaller number. And to maintain, I think you've got as many as six astronauts now. It takes a lot of kilowatts of power to run these machines. So, in the beginning, there were much less people, and now I think we have as many as six. Is that true, Paul? WS2N, K2RIW?
Yes, you have six people on board. Two Americans, three Russians, another guy from the European Space Agency, Paquet, I think his name is. You have six on board. The American side is Kimbrough, Shane Kimbrough, and then Peggy Whitson. She's 56 years old. She's the third trip up to the space station. So, it takes a lot of energy to keep them running. And now let's shift down to 5. And then if the Russians ever get their MLM up there, that's the multi-launch laboratory module, if they ever get that up there, it's another very big module. And the Proton rocket will launch it. And that's scheduled to go up probably the end of next year. It was supposed to actually go up probably about 10 years ago, but it never went. But once that's attached, then they'll go back to their regular three on a launch instead of 2, we drop it. So then you'll have a set of 5 on board. It's like starting in the spring, you're only going to see 5. But that will eventually shift back to 6. And like I was saying earlier on, once the American spaceships get going, launching from American soil on either the Dragon or the Starfire, because they can launch 4 at a time, you'll have 7. Dream Chaser right now is not, they're not building it for crew. They planned on doing that originally, but NASA don't want that yet. It'll just be cargo. But the European Space Agency has been talking to Sierra Nevada Corporation, the one that makes the Dream Chaser. And I think they are really pushing hard. They want, they'll pay them to continue to develop the crew version. Eventually, they would launch it from the Ariane 5 in French Guiana down in South America. They would love to be able to do that because that rocket is human rated, the Ariane 5. We drop it. So will the Ariane 6, which will probably come online in probably 2, 3, 4 years from now. The one that's going to, they're presently building to replace the Ariane 5. So Dream Chaser will probably eventually be flying out of South America, flying people. And for NASA, definitely, they already have a contract for at least 6 flights for cargo. And you know, if that goes well, they'll probably sign them up for a crew. And like you said, they'd be able to put 4 on board that spacecraft. Back to you, there.
Paul, what's the maximum number of astronauts that have ever been on the International Space Station? I think back in the days when the space shuttle was in operation, wasn't there a brief period of time with about 8 people on board? In which case, doesn't that create a line in front of the bathroom? How about you, Paul?
Yeah, there's 2 bathrooms on board. If they ever get the MLM, the Russian version of it, they'll have 3. Most people that have actually been on the station, you know, they weren't all, you know, they didn't have beds for everybody. But, you know, the most bases that you ever saw in one picture was 13. So you could look for that on the internet. I think I have it in one of my magazines, but I'm sure it's on the internet. Picture of 13 bases. So, yeah, you know, you have, you probably had a crew of 7 going up with the shuttle. You probably had a crew that was about to change out on a Soyuz spacecraft and another existing crew that was there. So, whatever the numbers were, you had a total of 13. That's the max. And don't forget, you don't have the bathroom problem because, you know, the crew that belongs on the space shuttle would head over back to the space shuttle. The space shuttle had their own bathroom. Back to you.
Wow. 13 people. I presume that was only for like a day or so. Although I guess some of the supplies could be coming from the shuttle that was attached. And there's the next question. Right now, what's the most number of spacecraft that can be docked? I think you've got a pair of Soyuz, and then sometimes you're docking a Progress and some of these other things. What's the maximum number of things they can dock all at once right now, Paul? K2RIW?
Yeah, it is. The goal is to have ultimately 8 ports that could either hold cargo or spacecraft or people. That would either dock or berth. There's a difference between docking and berthing. The Russian side has 4 locations. They don't differ your NGA between berthing or docking. All their spacecraft are the same. The Soyuz manned spacecraft and the Progress. Same diameter, everything. They come up automatically, autonomously. They don't even have to, you know, fly it in. It'll fly in all by itself, and it will dock with the spacecraft. They have 4 locations. One in the Zvezda, that's the rear of it. That's the one that they like to use because it helps push the station higher when they have to raise the orbit every now and then. And then there's 3 other locations, 90 degrees, offset 90 degrees. They have their own, nodes sticking out of the different locations. One is called the Piers, another one's called Razda, and there's another one that they use as well. And they have 4 locations. So you could have, for instance, 2 Progress ships attached right now. Let me drop it. Right now you don't have that, but you could have 2 attached, and then you could also have 2 Soyuz spacecraft attached. That you do have. You have 2 Soyuz spacecraft attached right now. That's why you have 6 people on board. 3 each to get into the spaceship and leave if there was an emergency. You always have to have a seat for everybody. So that's the Russian side. The same for the other side, the American side. We would like to also have a total of 4. Right now, we officially have 2 cargo locations for our berthing. Let me drop it. One is in the Unity node, and then the other one is in the Harmony node. And they're both facing the Earth. And they're the berthing locations for any of the cargo vehicles that are going up there. For instance, Dragon cargo vehicle, or the Cygnus cargo vehicle, and now the HGV that's going to be going up from Japan on Friday. You'll always see them docked on the bottom of the space station facing the Earth, because they're the 2 ports. They have 2 different nodes, 2 different modules. 2 ports sticking down are reserved now for berthing. Now you have 2 more. Let me drop it. One sticking out of the front of Tranquility, and that's where the space shuttle used to always dock. Always used to dock in the same location. Well, now they have this pressure mating adapter number 2 that's sticking out, and that's where the space shuttle used to attach to. They needed to convert that for all the new spacecraft that are going to be coming up, such as Dragon and such as Starliner. So they installed recently the International Docking Adapter, the ITER. They did spacewalk and everything, and now that one is on. So that'll be one location for a crew to come in, let's say a crew of 4. And that is next station is going to be on the Zenith location, sticking out of the top of the same module, the Tranquility module, sticking out of the top of that. You're going to have right now you're missing a pressure mating adapter. Pressure mating adapter is presently temporarily stored on node 3, which is the Harmony module. That's over where the oxygen generator thing is. So eventually we have to have the robotic arm grab that pressure mating adapter number 3 and bring it over to the new location sticking out of the top in that dear port of pressure mating of the Tranquility module. Once that's sticking out of the top, then they'll need another ITER, send that up from Earth. do another spacewalk, install the new ITER, that's the international docking adapter, to that pressure mating adapter, and then you'll have your final location. So then you'll have two final spots for crews to show up, and then you'll have two American side cargo locations from dropping, and four locations on the Russian side. So a total of eight places to get into the space station with somebody or something. I hope I explained it. If anybody really wants to look into this, you can find diagrams of the International Space Station on online. NASA's got them. They're really quite good. Back to you, Dick.
I'm amazed, Paul, at the size of this endeavor. In the next year or two, this great big Russian MLM module is going up. Another IDA module from the United States. This thing is getting bigger and heavier. And there are people who think that the International Space Station construction is complete. Not complete at all, is it, Paul? And as you make it bigger and heavier, you need more power, maybe more solar cells, more boosting power required because it's more and more mass you have to accelerate. This thing is becoming, it's growing like Topsy. At the rate we're going, it sounds like construction will not be finished for another couple of years. Isn't that true, Paul? WS2N, K2RIW?
Yeah, well, the main construction was really done, except for this MLM big module. Now, to get that on, they have to disconnect the piers docking port, and they're going to throw that away. They're going to actually attach that to a discarded Progress ship, and that will be thrown away, and then this big, huge module will take its place. So, you know, it's kind of like a little renovation, throwing an old module away and putting this new big thing, which is about five times bigger, in its place. So, you know, and then they keep coming up with new ideas. There's a new idea from Bigelow. Bigelow's now got this expandable module on. Originally, that wasn't part of the plan. The one that's up there now is this expandable module that's floating on the space station, attached to the space station. Within 2 years, that will be disconnected, and that's going to be deorbited, and then they're going to have another port open. He's in, you know, Bigelow, that built that thing, is in talks with NASA, and last I heard, it looked like it was going pretty good, but they don't have a signed deal yet. He wants to attach one of his big modules. You know, the last one was, I think, 500... I forget how many square feet, but it was how many cubic feet? Well, it was about 10 foot in length and about 13, 14 feet in width. This next thing that's going to go up is going to be probably about, I don't know, 25, 30 feet long and about, you know, 18 feet diameter, 18, 20 feet diameter. And that's called the BA-330.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Hey there, when you mentioned that, the international docking adapter, that's not all that big. It's about 6 foot in diameter, and it's probably about maybe 4 foot wide. Drop it. And it weighs about 4,000 pounds, and that was installed recently, and they're going to send another one up. So that's not really a module. It's really an adapter. It's some kind of a... You've got to be able to interface with the new workings of the modern docking adapter system that's going to be on all the new spacecraft. It'll eventually be on Dream Chaser too, you know, or in the future the European Space Agency wants to build a rocket or a spacecraft to attach to the space station. They would just go along and use the same ITER interface, International Docking Adapter System that NASA has developed. By the way, Boeing built. There's a lot to this, you know. the Columbia module. They want to put another porch, they call it a porch, on the outside of that for experiments. Let me drop it. They have plans of bringing those pieces up with the Dragon spacecraft. You know, so, not all that huge, but, you know, yeah, little by little. Little pieces. The only big one coming up would be that big module by Russia. And, you know, that comes up without it, without anybody. It flies all by itself and attaches to the space station. Remember the old days when space shuttle used to go up, they used to bring up a module in a cargo bay, and they had their own robotic arm, and sometimes they would hand it off to the other robotic arm on the space station and attach it to a new section. You know, the Russians don't think like that. They think it's all automatic. You send up a module all by itself, and it magically attaches to another one. That's the way they do it. Let me drop it. They've been extended to 2024 right now. In fact, European Space Agency just signed on to continue to 2024. Japan already did. Russia already did. And of course, the United States already did. So it's good up until then. So that's a good thing. And we'll see what happens. They believe all the parts and everything are good at least until 2028, mechanically. I wouldn't be surprised if parts of it get transferred over to private industry in the future. They're talking about that. The Russians are eventually going to take this new module that's going up, plus one of the other ones, and maybe disconnect it from the whole International Space Station in the future and start building their own space station. That's in the back of their minds, too. So we don't know what's going to happen with this thing, but we'll keep watching it as it goes over in the night sky. Back to you, Dick.
Paul, once again, give me an idea of the size of the International Space Station. I have the impression it's a little bit bigger than a football field, and I think it's approaching the size of the football stadium. Is that roughly true of you, Paul, K2RIW?
No, we're just over the field, not the stadium, but the field itself. You know, include the end zone, you know, for the length of the truss section. You have 11 truss sections bolted together, you know, linear, one right after the other. So if you go that 100 yards plus the two end zones, that would be the length of it. And then the width of it would easily go from, you know, from one side to the other of that football grid, because the length of the solar panels are 240 feet, and then all the modules together, linear modules, you know, you start off at one end, you got the Zesda, then you got the Zarya module, and then you've got the Unity module. Let me drop it. You know, these things are all at least, you know, 20 feet long, you know, in that category. Now you keep going forward, that Unity is attached to the Destiny module. That's our big U.S. module. And then that continues on. It attaches to another node, the Tranquility module. And then that branches off. There's more modules. You go 90 degrees off to one side, to the starboard side, and you got this Columbia module, this Columbus module. It's a massive thing, you know. They're 28 feet long and 14 feet in diameter. And then to go off to the port side, you've got the Kaibo module, and that's got two modules. That's another one bolted on top of that. And that's the one with the big porch. That's got a big, you could open up an airlock in there and send things out. Let me drop it. And then to back up a little bit, you know, you come back out of those two modules, the Columbus and the in the Kaibo, now you're back into Tranquility. You go back through Destiny, and you're back into the Unity module again. That has ports sticking out of it. One port you go out, you have another module, it's called Quest. You go inside there, and you have, you can put three people in there, two of them in spacesuits, push one out, and push two of them out the airlock, and the other guy's still in the Quest module, but, you know, with a door behind him. Then you go 180 degrees the other direction, and you're going to go into something called the Tranquility, correction, the Tranquility module. Once you're in there, that's where you're gonna pass your oxygenating machine, and you're gonna be able to look down through the cupola to outer space. you're looking at the Earth, so you got a lot of rooms. They say it's bigger than a 747 on the inside there. Back here.
Wow. Do each of the modules have a door that can be closed, an airtight door between the modules? Like if you wanted to throw away one of the modules or put a new module in the middle of the system, can you open and close doors? And some of the pictures I've seen, I see a whole bunch of cables going through the portal where the door was. Unless you have some great way of rapidly disconnect those cables, you can't close that door. Over to you on that, Paul, K2RIW.
Yeah, well, any cable's gone through a temporary, you know, if they ever had to disconnect for any reason, those cables would have to be disconnected. And then there's one other module, by the way, called the Leonardo, another great big 30-foot long thing, 14-foot diameter. That's also sticking out of the forward-facing port on Tranquility. And that module was brought up half a dozen times by the space shuttle. They used to bring it up, take it out of the back of the space shuttle, this big, you know, almost 30-foot long thing, 14-foot long, and then they used to attach it to this existing space station, one of the ports. It would berth it, attach it with the 16 bolts, and they would unload it. It was a, you know, all the cargo would be in there. They would unload all the different hundreds, dozens of these scientific racks, and, you know, 30,000 pounds worth of stuff they'd be bringing into the space station on a regular basis. Then they would unload stuff that had to go back down to Earth. They would take the robotic arm, unbird this whole thing, and attach it back to the cargo bay of the shuttle and fly it back to Earth. And then they'd bring it back up again. And they had three or four of these things. This was just one of them. They brought these things up many, many times. So at the end of the life of the space shuttle, they said, why don't we keep this Leonardo module? Why don't we just rebuild it on Earth and make it a permanent structure? So they renovated it and made it so it would last forever instead of just a temporary up and down type of thing. Different new insulation, new wiring, and they went nuts, and then they attached it permanently to the space station. For a long period of time, it was sticking out of the bottom of the Unity module. And they needed that now for all these cargo flights that are coming up. So they disconnected that. I remember Scott Kelly was involved with that. He was the guy that was up there for a year. They disconnected that whole thing with the robotic arm. With no shuttles up there or anything. This is all done by them. Let me drop it. They transferred this huge module from the bottom of the space station all the way across over to where it is now attached to the forward-facing port of Tranquility. And then bolted it up onto that. Now, to go back to your question, every time they do this, they have these doors. There's doors on the inside of a module, and there's doors on the other side of the module. You know, so they look like big garage doors, about 50 inches square. And they lift up on them to open them. They close them the same way. They pull down on them, and then they crank them. Either open or close the long latches that go in there, and So, you know, you have a door on one side and a door on the other. They're all throughout the station. I remember trying to count them one time. I think there's like 30 or 35 of these doors have to be mounted in the space station. And you see them all the time. And they're like a light blue. If you look at pictures of the astronauts will be talking, you'll see in the background this blue door that's either up or to the wall side or wherever it might be, and it's on tracks. And they're the doors that they open and close. Back to you, Dick.
To your knowledge, Paul, can all of those doors be pressurized either way? In other words, could the inside of a module have the pressure and pushing the doors outward? Or could whatever the module is attached to have the pressure and the module itself be operated as a vacuum? Can the doors, to your knowledge, be pressurized either way at 14.7 pounds per square inch? Over your ball.
Well, when you close the door, the inside of the door is pushing against a face, the face, you're pressurizing inside to 14 pounds per square inch. If you have a vacuum on the outside, there's no way this door is going to push through. It's on the inside, with an inside flange, it can't pass that. So, it's not mounted with the door, on the outside. The door is actually on the inside. It's like your garage door, you close it, and the door is really on the inside of the house, not the outside, The face of it, you can't go past there. So, you could even pressurize the inside even higher, and it wouldn't matter. It's not going to blow out. Is that what you think?
Not quite. Each of these doors is not a flat piece of sheet metal. If it was, it would balloon out a little bit, and the outer perimeter would change, and you'd get some problems. Each of these doors have got ribs to them, and the ribs are set up in such a way that it can tolerate internal pressure and stop the pressure on the door from deflecting. So for a module to be pressurized on the inside, and the doors are pushing outward, supported by those ribs on each door, that's fine. Do they have the option of any one of those doors being pressurized in the opposite way? Could the module that I'm attached to, from the module I'm inside of, could the module I'm attached to be pressurized and my module not be pressurized? I'd now be applying pressure to the door in the opposite way, where it's trying to push the door inward. It's trying to open the door. I know you've got these great big bolts on the door, which really can hold it down. But I'm still asking the question, do you think it can be pressurized in the opposite direction? Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
Yeah, well, I would imagine if I'm looking at the Cygnus spacecraft that gets attached, that's the Cygnus, it's going to come up, it's going to be pressurized on the opposite side, and then the 16 bolts are going to attach me to it, then it's safe to open up my door on the inside, and then I can reach in and open up the door on the Cygnus side. And when you open the door, there's these cranks in the middle, and you crank it, you either go left, clockwise or counterclockwise, and that's pulling in or pulling out these, it looks like about 12 of these pieces that are, probably geared on the inside of that door, and they slide, out or in, and they're spaced evenly. So those things are mechanically going to hold that door where it's not going anywhere. So I would say yes, you could probably pressurize it on one side. And let's say you had a Cygnus door, and the Cygnus spacecraft didn't have any pressure on the inside. And we attach, if I open up my side, I'd be pressurizing that side. Let me drop it. I'm sure it won't, it probably wouldn't push in that door, but then it wouldn't be safe to open it. They would have to make sure that side, the opposite side is always pressurized. In order, after you attach any module, you always see them talking, and they're always doing pressure checks, and they don't open anything until both sides are equal. Why would you get into that situation? I can't imagine getting into that situation where the opposite side is pressurized.
I guess I'm thinking of the worst case situation where you develop a leak somewhere in the whole space station, and you want to close off doors to limit the area where the leak is giving you grief. As it is right now, you've got a huge amount of internal volume. All of that air is in common. And if a meteor hit a module and created a good-sized hole, and air is leaking out pretty fast, you can see what I'm worried about here. By the way, the 16 bolts that are around the perimeter of each door, are those bolts captured? In other words, when you loosen those bolts, I'd worry about the bolts being stored in some place where you can't find them when you need them in a hurry. I hope they unfasten in such a way that they completely disconnect the door, but yet they're still captured in some way. Over to you, Paul, KQLIW.
Yeah, you're not going to get out in a hurry. There's power connections, there's disconnect, there's air, between the different modules that have to be disconnected. So it's a very slow process to unbird something, you know, it takes hours. Where a docking with people immediately jump inside and the second you close the door, make sure your side is pressurized, you can disconnect. And that's why it's set up that way. So there's a big difference between docking and berthing. The other difference is you only have a meter diameter for people. So you can't bring big cargo in and out, big science experiments. You need the berthing system for that. So there's a benefit for the berthing system compared to one over the other. But big. Docking is quick. But small diameter. Can't have it both ways. Just wanted to also tell you that there's another, before I know it's getting late, before I go, there's another country, or company from that country, from India, that's now signed up for the Google Prize to land something on the moon. And they apparently are going to launch from India. You know, well, there'll be a secondary payload, but it will launch from India to the moon, and they're trying to win the Google Prize of $30 million. Up until now, there's really only been one, and that was from the United States, and that was Moon Express, and they already had a ride on a company.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
To go to the moon. They've been the favorite, but now there's two more dropping.
Any question for Paul also?
Okay, there's two more. One from India now, and then another one from Audi. Audi has signed up. I saw a picture of theirs. They plan on actually sending two rovers in one spacecraft. So Audi, the company that makes cars, they developed one, and looks like they're going to get a ride on one of the SpaceX flights, and they got to do this by the end of 2017. Otherwise, the deal is off from Google. So now you got three people. I know years ago there was 16 different people competing to do this. So now, originally I thought it was just going to be one. Now it looks like there's three. So it'll be a race to land on a moon with something, a rover, and then go 500 meters and take more pictures. And if you can do that, you get $20 million. Second prize gets $10 million. Back to you, Dick. I know John wants to say something.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, quick question, Dick. Aren't those 16 bolts motor-driven, if I remember correctly?
Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, and you can get up to like 16,000 pounds per square inch on these things. And you're right, they're all motor-driven. So, But they do them in stages, you know, just like doing a flange on a pump or something. You know, they'll do four opposing bolts at one time, and then the other four bolts. Then they let it sit for a while, let the heat and expand and contract for another half hour or so, and then they'll continue with their process. It might take them a couple of hours before they have it all bolted up, John.
Yep, very true. That's why I was wondering. I believe they were captured, and they're captured because they're motor-driven. All right. Thanks for the answer. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, that simplifies that a lot. Paul, you mentioned earlier the astronauts are quite often complaining about the noise of the fans. There are designs of fans where you really understand the turbulence around each of the blades, where you can make a fan a hell of a lot quieter. And if you and I go to Bed Bath & Beyond, you will see a Dyson fan, which has no blades to it. It electronically moves air. So I'm a little bit amazed that they didn't use some of the more silent fan types. Over to you, Paul, K2RAW.
Yeah, they've advanced as time went on. I mean, the mirror, they said, was unbearable with loud fans. So they said it's a big improvement with the International Space Station, but you still hear them. So I guess, you know, over time they'll probably change them out. And I'm sure if they ever build another space station, they'll do a lot better. As far as the Dyson goes, I always thought that was a bit of a, I don't want to use scam, misleading type of thing. Inside that, there's a, if you take it apart, in the bottom inside, there's like an impeller fan, and it's blowing it, it's going up to the sides of to the outside of those tubes, and there's a million little ports that you can't see. Could put a magnifying glass, and that's what they're doing. It's just a fast impeller spinning thing on the inside of that, in the base of that. Back to you.
But because that impeller is on the inside, if it's properly soundproofed, there is a way that maybe you could make that kind of quiet. What do you think?
Oh, it is quiet, yeah. But you know, I've seen it in the store, and I heard it was some kind of an electrical ion, you know, thing was moving. It's not, there's no ions moving. That's air coming out, and it's done with some kind of a, I haven't seen the impeller yet, but and for the price that they get, I'm not going to buy one and take one apart. But if I throw one in the garbage, I'd have that thing apart in about 2 minutes.
What do you remember as the price on that thing, Paul?
I think I saw it in Target. I don't know, was it, I don't know, $70 or some big number. I don't know. For this thing. It worked good, but you know, I think it's a little deceptive in their advertising.
From my point of view, that guy Dyson is an extremely good engineer. I'll admit that his vacuum is twice the price of many other kinds of vacuum. I own one. But boy, does that thing work. Wow. Okay, you guys have listened to TechNet number 1630 and Space Report number 230. We intend to be back next week. We'll settle some of these problems. We'll have better understanding of antennas. Let's see what else we discuss here tonight. Can't remember what the subjects were right now. But we'll be next. Well, we're going to answer all the questions next week. Isn't that true, John? KC2WGB, K2RIW.
I agree with the vacuum. Excellent. I've seen it before. It's very good.
That sucks. All right. Yeah, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us and wish everybody well. Have a great week and be kind to each other and do a lot of thinking about some questions for us. We could maybe get some different questions, maybe some more antenna questions, but we'll see how it goes. Thanks again, KC2WGB. Paul, over to you, sir.
Okay, John, very good. 73, everybody. Any space questions, I could be reached at spacenetreport@gmail.com, and we'll be here hopefully next week. We'll talk about the Japanese launch to the International Space Station. Hope that makes it up there. If you get a chance to watch it, it's like, start watching around 7:45 on the NASA channel, and it should go up around, I think around, I got to check, but in the 8:30 area, a.m., from Japan. Back to you, Dick. Have a good week.
Is that 8:30 tomorrow morning, Paul?
Oh, no, Friday, I'm sorry. Friday, that's the night, this Friday.
Very good. And remind me next week, John, we should have set aside a little bit more time in case anybody in the hinterland wants to ask any question earlier or even a question during the space report. The guys who sign in by Echolink, they need some extra time to get their edge in word-wise, and we didn't give them a chance tonight. So remind me next week. Thank you for any comment on that, John.
Well, if they're on Echolink and they have a question, I'll pick that right up if they send a message in. But, yes, I will remind you, and we should do that every once in a while. KC2, WGB.
Bye-bye, you all.
Dumb question, if anybody can help. How is N2EO doing? Okay, N1YDY. Nothing very clear on the...
Mike, the last I heard, he's out of the hospital 2 days ago. He's back home. He signs into this repeater a couple of times per day, and all is going pretty well. Back to you, Mike.
Okay, it's Hank, but thank
you. Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
I know we've spoken.
I'm
not on the air as often as I'd like to be, Richie. I've been on intermittently. We've spoken a good number of times before, I think. Anyway, the call is AA2GC, and how are you this morning?
I didn't get the name, but I'm doing good. I just got up a little while ago, had my coffee, and I gotta get my breakfast.
I know that story, Richie. The name here is Ted, Tango Echo Delta.
All right, Ted. Very good. Are you mobile? Are you fixed? And where are you?
We're going to work. I am mobile on the Meadowbrook Parkway. And it's good that you're inside, Richie, because it is raining pretty heavily here right now.
Okay, Ted. It's been a long time since we spoke. And possibly when I spoke to you last, I was living in Whitestone, Queens. I live in Massapequa Park here and have a soulmate that lives with me.
Oh, good. I hope that you're as happy or even happier in Massapequa Park. So I hope it was a good move for you. I'm not too far from you, so I assume it's raining in Massapequa Park also.
I got curtains up here. Really can't tell. But yes, it was a very nice move. Her name is Patty, and we've been out here about 3 years. We love it. We love it out here. It's a nice house. And I sold the house in Queens. I inherited it from my parents. When they passed away, it was very lonely, and a mutual friend introduced me and Patty.
Oh, great, Rich. So I take it your life is better now, and that's always a good thing. I'm glad you're happy because you sound like you are.
I got my hand gear, I got Patty here, and what more can I want?
Just don't get a dog. That's all, so you don't have the extra responsibility.
No, we have two dogs. And a cat. We have a big dog who's a Labrador. Her name is Bailey. And she's a sweetheart. She's very, very obedient. And then we have a little guy, a Chihuahua. Belonged to Patty's mother before our mother passed away. Buddy is blind, so she has to keep a good eye on him. And we have a little cat, an orange cat named Bosco.
All right, so you have the responsibility. You get very attached. They're like children all the time. We have two. We have two from rescues from North Shore Animal League. We have a German Shepherd mix and a rat terrier. And I'm usually the, even though I wasn't the one that went to get them because I wanted my freedom, I'm the one that does the heavy lifting.
All right, Ted. Well, you know, Barry the Labrador was in Florida. When Patty's mother passed away, she already had Buddy, the little Chihuahua, because he belonged to Patty's mother, and she, before she died, she asked Patty to take Buddy. But then she was down in the dumps, and it wasn't 24 hours that her mother died. She went to a pound and got Bailey. She's a wonderful dog. And the story she got was that it belonged to a soldier who was deployed to Iraq. So she's a wonderful dog.
Well, it sounds like things worked out very well for Bailey. So the person that was deployed to Iraq, I guess, didn't have any intent on trying to get Bailey back once he finished his tour of duty.
I guess not.